Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The establishment strikes back, is how political analyst Dean Spiliotis described last night's primary results here in New Hampshire. In the first congressional district Democratic contest, establishment favorite Chris Pappas took the prize easily and early. And it was the same story in the Democratic gubernatorial primary, with Molly Kelly the clear early victor. Republican primary contests were closer, and there were no party favorites. In the first district, former police chief and liquor enforcement official Eddie Edwards will represent Republicans. And in the second, the GOP nominee is State Representative Steve Negron. Today in The Exchange, we look back a bit at what voters said yesterday, but more we'll look forward at themes these new nominees will present for the general election. And of course, let's hear from you. How do you feel about last night's results? What do you hope these candidates say now on the campaign trail? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at @NHPRExchange. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour. Lauren Chulgin is here, NHPR reporter with our State of Democracy Project. She covered the first congressional district. And Lauren, good to see you late night. We really appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Josh Rogers, NHPR senior reporter. Josh, thank you also for taking time out.
You're welcome, Lauren.
And also with us, Wayne Lesperance, Dean of Undergraduate Studies and a Professor of Political Science at New England College, head of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Wayne, really good to have you too. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Wayne, too, first, what's the big takeaway for you from last night? Is there a sort of meta message that primary voters sent here in New Hampshire?
Sure. I think there are sort of three general things that we were all are looking to see. One was around turnout. What do voters care? Is there this surge of excitement around candidates or even in response to the national mood around the president? And I think we're hearing, at least anecdotally, from some districts, we are seeing very high turnout. Durham, for example, and some wards in Manchester. I think we're still sort of sorting all of that out. But at least at this point, we're hearing lots of stories, lots of news about big voter turnout. Two other themes. One was this ongoing conversation about progressives versus the establishment. And to Dean's point last night, the establishment pushed back pretty aggressively. That seems to be a very uniquely New Hampshire thing in a broader trend. So we'll have to see if that holds up in other places. But in New Hampshire, in the case of Kelly and Pappas, we see the local young local guy in Pappas, and in the case of Kelly, the establishment, the endorsements, all playing a role. Finally, the impact of nationalizing the election. Are voters concerned about New Hampshire issues, or are they really focused on national issues? And I think that's something we're going to spend some time talking about today, because that was another theme that I thought kind of came through.
Any surprises for you, Josh?
Well, the margin, certainly in the governor's race, was a surprise for me. I didn't talk to anyone involved with either Marchand or Kelly's campaign who expected a 2-to-1 margin. One person very close and kind of wired into the Kelly campaign was saying that, if the population voting were simply people who appear at Democratic Party picnics and the like, that Steve Marchand would probably win. But if the population was larger, it would mean good things for Kelly. And I don't think her prediction actually turned out to be true, given the margins. I mean, you look at, Kelly's win was conclusive. It was early. And, Steve Marchand carried a handful of small towns. And this is after campaigning pretty much straight on through from 2016 until now. And, what that means is unclear. He kind of went all in on the idea that what Democrats wanted was a bold leader who would kind of move the goalposts, realign the party, and redefine what it means to be a New Hampshire Democrat. Molly Kelly was the pick of the establishment, which doesn't mean that she's a a conservative Democrat by any means. I mean, she represented a liberal district for years in the state Senate, and her policy positions were pretty progressive. But she tended to try to blur or be less explicit about where she stood on some things, which, you know, might make life easier in a general election. We'll see how easy that life is. I think the fact that she was a woman was probably helpful. A lot of voters I talked to were interested in electing a woman, and there have been 15 women who are running for governor now. So that is certainly a theme. And also, she had more resources, and that seemed to show up. I mean, going out to polling places yesterday, saw a lot more action on behalf of the first CD candidates than you did for gubernatorial candidates. But there was a clear alignment of, you know, party regulars, the big unions, people who can turn out votes for Chris Pappas. And I think Molly Kelly was a beneficiary of that as well.
Well, and you're right. It was a big margin. Latest results, Molly Kelly with almost 66% of the vote. And Steve Marchand with 34.5%, so it's
towns,
big.
Small ones that Marchand carried. I mean, his best performance was in Romney, where he won by 37 votes. And, you know, I find that shocking.
How would you summarize, Lauren, what we saw from voters yesterday, just broadly here in New Hampshire?
Broadly, well, I think Wayne hit on a number of points of this idea of the establishment versus the progressive. We kind of flipped it on its head here in New Hampshire. But also, I think that the big theme here was that at their local races, people felt comfortable with Chris Pappas because they know him. You know, I talked to a lot of Chris Pappas supporters last night at the party at the Puritan, and they just kept on coming back to this theme of this is our quote unquote homegrown candidate. This is our homegrown, you know, guy that we know. We see him at the Puritan. He was my executive counselor, et cetera, et cetera. And that was also a message to Maura Sullivan, his main opponent in the race, who had moved to New Hampshire last June and entered into the race just a couple months later when she heard that Carol Shea Porter was retiring. She had a really hard time shaking off that carpetbagger label that was tagged onto her, and she had considered running in other congressional districts. Most of her money came from out of state, 96% of it. So, you know, it was about the establishment and the progressive, you know, that we've been hearing, but it was also about who people really feel like they know locally.
Let's hear from our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. If you're just sifting through the results, give us a call. Questions and comments are welcome. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Or again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Let's focus a little bit more on the governor's race, the only statewide race on the ballot last night. And just to kick off our discussion, guys, let's hear a little bit from Democratic gubernatorial nominee Molly Kelly. Here she is in her victory speech. She said, "Tonight we celebrate, tomorrow we take on Chris Sununu."
From day one on this campaign, I rejected corporate campaign donations, unlike Chris Sununu, who's collected millions. And it's Chris Sununu giving wealthy corporations millions in tax breaks. When I'm governor, the people of New Hampshire will come first. We will take care of our children and families instead of wealthy corporations. That's the choice on November 6th.
Okay, again, that's Democratic gubernatorial nominee Molly Kelly talking to supporters last night. Wayne, what do you think about the sort of presentation of how I'm going to take on Chris Sununu?
I think it shows strength. I think she comes out of the gate saying, "I'm not going to be a shrinking violet." The quote that we're hearing most often is, "I will not be underestimated. I've been underestimated before." She warned the governor. The thing is, you know, whenever you have an incumbent in office, and in this case, a relatively popular incumbent, you've got to make the case to voters why this person deserves to be fired. And so that requires somewhat of an aggressive strategy. And I think we heard some of that in her voice and in her message yesterday.
Is that sort of code to female voters? Don't underestimate me.
I think so. I think that speaks to anybody who's ever felt marginalized. And marginalization is a big theme nationally and in New Hampshire this election cycle. So I think, you know, code or not, it's an honest expression, I think, to folks who have ever felt that they're on the outside looking in. And I think that's a powerful theme.
What
and
else
certainly
did you hear that
well,
speech?
To that point, Molly Kelly, her primary campaign spent a lot of time building a narrative about her own personal trajectory, going from, you know, single mother who working multiple jobs to, you know, someone who completed college and law school and had a career in financial planning and served in the state Senate. And, you know, I think that I agree with you that seems to be, you know, speaking to women and also to the notion of, you know, average people versus the powerful. And I also agree with Wayne that she has to render Chris Sununu unfit in the eyes of the electorate. And, you know, suggesting he's kind of on the take for corporate interests is one way to do that. I would expect, you know, she's talked a lot about family leave in her closing event, that he's out of touch by dint of his own biography, the son of a governor and a brother of a U.S. senator, with some of the everyday struggles that people face. And, you know, one challenge for her is that polling indicates that most people believe the state is headed in the right direction. And so we're going to hear a lot about tax cuts that the Democrats argue, you know, benefit the wealthy. We're going to hear about his cozy relationship with Eversource in the eyes of Democrats. She's been stressing her disinclination to accept corporate money from the very beginning of this race. I expect we'll hear more of that and, you know, more about her contrasting her personal story with that of Chris Sununu.
Well, let's hear a little bit more from that acceptance speech. And we're going to hear Molly Kelly hitting on some of those themes exactly that you talk about, Josh. So if anybody wants to know what specifics Molly Kelly will put forward, she was pretty clear about the case that she'll be making about why voters should choose her over Governor Sununu.
Chris Sununu wants a voucher program that will weaken public education and raise our property taxes. I think New Hampshire needs a governor who will strengthen our public schools, and I will be that governor. Chris Sununu takes tens of thousands of dollars from Eversource and advances their interest while our electric bills go up. New Hampshire needs a governor who will fight for clean energy and consumers, and I will be that governor. Chris Sununu calls paid family and medical leave a vacation. A vacation? New Hampshire needs a governor who knows to her core that paid family and medical leave is about being with the people you love the most when they need you the most. And I will be that governor.
Again, that's Democratic gubernatorial nominee Molly Kelly presenting some of the themes pretty clearly that she will bring to the campaign in November. But Josh, real quickly, I mean, you've pointed out, and many others have pointed out, New Hampshire almost always gives its governor a second term. So she's got a tough row to hoe there.
Well, you know, again, every election is different. Democrats point to the big turnout they had during the primary. They figure they can stoke that. Certainly, Donald Trump is helpful in mobilizing their voters. There are certainly efforts afoot to mobilize college students, you know, constituencies who vote for Democrats. So, you know, if the turnout gets large, the traditional norms may not apply.
Here's an email we just got from Katie, who says, now that the results are in, I'd love to hear how Molly Kelly, Chris Pappas, and Eddie Edwards are going to get all the people, my tally was over 128,000, Katie says, who voted for the other guys to support them. There was a lot of passion and energy and good ideas, especially on the progressive side, Katie says, that got squashed last night. And many of those voters are very turned off by the fact that their candidates got crushed by the New Hampshire Democratic establishment. How will the nominees bring their respective parties together? And I want to ask everybody this, but Lauren, you first, because you were at Pappas headquarters in the 1st Congressional District, and he really was the establishment choice.
He was, and it's an interesting question that I think, on the Democratic side especially, that Chairman Buckley worried a lot about publicly throughout the campaign. I mean, we are one of the last primary races in the country that leaves not very much time before the general election, so unifying the party has to happen really quickly. Buckley tried to ask campaigns and voters to not be negative, especially in the CD1 race, where there were so many candidates, and he was really worried about bad blood. He said he'd seen it in past elections before. And so I think, you know, we've got these unity breakfasts tomorrow. That's where the work will begin, you know, figuratively and literally. And I think for some candidates in that race, you know, the alternative is not worth it to them. They wouldn't vote for a Republican. They want to see that seat stay blue in the CD1 race. But I do think a lot of them, some of these more left-leaning Democrats, people like Lincoln Soldati, Degla McEachern, Levy Sanders, people who really pushed Medicare for All often on their campaign. A lot of people talked about abolishing ICE. These are these big left-leaning topics we hear about on the national scale. And this could have been a referendum on some of those things. we still have to wait and see. And so I'm wondering how much of the conversation turns to trying to marrying some of those ideas together.
Well, it's a great question, Katie, and one that did come up. And I'd love your thoughts too, Wayne. Yeah.
Sure. No, it is a great question. I think it's one of the central questions coming out of this election. And so one of the things that Democrats are going to have to do is to dispel this notion that establishment somehow doesn't mean also progressive. You can be a progressive establishment candidate. We heard some of those themes from some of these candidates. At the end of the day, the strategy that works best is the one that gives you the greatest likelihood of winning in November. So you're going to see some of these folks tack back towards the middle a bit because they recognize there are a lot of disaffected Republicans. There certainly is a huge swath of independent voters that they need to pull over to their side on the Democratic side. And on the other side with the Republicans, you can rely on an active Republican base, but that's increasingly shrinking these days. They have got to find a way to talk to the middle. It's very interesting to listen to Steve Negron talk about things like foreign affairs, foreign policy, where he does have some differences where the president is not afraid to say so.
On immigration especially,
is another one. So I think that the ones that were successfully nuanced in their approach, where they were a little fuzzy around some issues, that's given them a little bit of space to tack more towards the middle. But this is going to be a theme that we hear about all the time, the establishment and the progressives.
Well, and to Katie's point, those Marchand voters in the gubernatorial race, he made himself out to be the clear progressive alternative. Here's a voter who supported Marchand. She talked with NHPR yesterday, Becky Hudson, and she was really frustrated by the state's political heavyweights who backed Marchand's opponent, Molly Kelly.
I feel like Jean Shaheen, Maggie Hassan, Annie Custer, Planned Parenthood, and everybody else that endorsed her just voted for me. So I feel like my vote really doesn't count. I'm so disappointed. I mean, I am really upset about it.
So, Josh Rogers, how do Democrats bring together people like Becky Hudson, who is really upset that, as she put it, the establishment weighed in so heavily that my vote didn't even count?
Well, I interviewed Becky Hudson, and so I asked her, are you going to vote for Molly Kelly? And
In the general.
And she said, well, if the choice is Molly Kelly and Kristi Noem, I'm going to vote for Molly Kelly. And so that is one thing that, you know, parties have going for them, the sort of tribal loyalty and the idea that, you know, the alternative is worse in the eyes of people who are disappointed. You know, I think in the first CD, it's interesting because that's a district that's held by a Democrat but did vote for Donald Trump in 2016, you know, and that's obviously toggled back and forth. You know, I do think Donald Trump is going to be very helpful in terms of party unity. That's one thing you hear. You heard that from voters at the polls. I'm voting today to right what I see is wrongs going on in Washington. You heard Chris Pappas invoke Trump during his victory speech. You didn't hear it from Molly Kelly, but, you know, you're going to see the Democrats link Chris Sununu to Donald Trump. If you look at the big the Democratic events leading up to this primary and, you know, in the near future, where typically prospective presidential candidates show up, the people who've generated the most excitement were Michael Avenatti, you know, Stormy Daniels' lawyer at a picnic in Greenfield, and, you know, the Democrats book Alec Baldwin, you know, sort of Trump impersonator and celebrity for their big dinner. And so these are normally places where, you know, conventional candidates kicking the tires for, you know, the next presidential go-round are up here. And, you know, what seems to be generating the interest and potentially loosening the purse strings of Democrats are people who are just Trump antagonists.
All right. And I know you want to jump in, Lauren. We're going to head into a short break. So definitely want to hear from you on that theme as well in just a moment. Also coming up, more of your emails. Thank you for that one, Katie. exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call. Tell us what you make of last night's primary election results, what you want these candidates to talk about as they move into the general election phase. Join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Also coming up, we are going to be talking with the first district Republican primary winner, Eddie Edwards. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. We'll be right back.
Support NHPR today and get entered to win a trip to Nashville, Tennessee. Catch a show at the legendary Grand Ole Opry, stroll along the Music City Wall of Fame, or see where Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, and Elvis Presley made music history. Give as an NHPR sustainer, and you're entered into all our drawings, including a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Australia or New Zealand. Don't wait. Become an NHPR sustainer today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the results of yesterday's primary voting and what's ahead for New Hampshire in the general elections. Now that these nominees are set, let's get your thoughts and reactions. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org, or call in 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, just before the break, we were responding to an email from Katie who said, okay, how can these parties come together now, especially on the Democratic side, where progressives were, some of them, upset that the establishment candidates won. And Lauren Children, I did want to get your thoughts on that, especially in terms of the first congressional district, which you covered.
Yeah, I think the calculation might have been different had Morris Sullivan won, as far as trying to unify people behind the nominee, because there was so much anger from people about her moving here. There were so many tweets from Democrats against her. You know, there was a lot of hurt feelings about this flyer that she put out saying that Chris Pappas had no backbone. And so there, I don't know that it would have made Democrats not vote for her, because in the end, like we've been saying, for a lot of them, the alternative, voting for a Republican, is just out of the question. But this was a big question for me going into last night, was because people had been so public about their feelings about her, even given Chairman Buckley saying, you know, please keep your negative feelings to yourself. That, to me, was a big question. But I wonder, because so many people know Chris Pappas, if unifying behind him will be a little easier.
Well, let's hear a little bit from someone who was relieved that Chris Pappas won because of the sort of outsider, carpetbagger, outside money factors surrounding Morris Sullivan. Let's hear a little bit from Judy Reardon. As you all know, she's a longtime Democratic political operative. She was a Pappas supporter, said she was very happy with last night's result.
I think many of us were concerned that if there was a different result, it was going to send the message that you can parachute into New Hampshire, and if you have enough money, buy a congressional seat. And for, you know, the sake of New Hampshire politics and the presidential primary, it is really good to see that that can't work here.
Again, that's Judy Reardon, a Democrat, talking about Chris Pappas's win over the second place winner, Morris Sullivan. I want to return to the first congressional district race, but on the Republican side. With us now on the phone is the winner in that race, Eddie Edwards, a former police chief, a former liquor enforcement official. And Mr. Edwards, welcome back to The Exchange and congratulations.
Thank you for having me. Good morning to you.
Why do you think you won this race?
Well, I think our message resonated with the voters over a year and a half, talking about the character, integrity, and unifying our country around American values. I think really resonated with voters.
This is known, and you don't need me to tell you this, Mr. Edwards, a swing district, gone back and forth, voted for Trump in the last election, but voted for Carol Shea Porter. So really the purplest of purple districts. Right. You and Senator Sanborn both made the case that you were the better conservative. Now it's the general election. How do you appeal beyond Republicans in this district, independents and maybe even Democrats?
Well, you know, one of the things I've said, because I was taught this by my grandmother growing up, I was taught, you know, American values. And I believe American values are consistent with what we talk about a lot in the Republican Party. And I don't think it's not a message that would not resonate with general election voters. You know, we all want our families to be secure. We all want a greater control over our lives. We all want to be able to keep more money in our pocket. We all want to give back to our communities. We all want to participate in our communities. And those are things that conservative messages, those are the messages I've been talking about for over a year and a half now.
Character was a big issue for you in this campaign. Sure. And some say you used that pretty skillfully against Senator Sanborn. As you know, Mr. Edwards, President Trump's character is regularly called into question, yet you've embraced him. Yeah. So how are you going to talk about this as a general election candidate? You know, on the Republican side in your primary, everybody was, you know, getting close to Trump. But as headlines keep piling up about the ethical and legal troubles of this White House, how are you now as the Republican standard bearer going to address this?
Well, because I'm fighting for conservatives. I'm fighting for the general election voters. I'm fighting for New Hampshire families in Congressional District 1. And I think when we start to focus on one individual, we're a nation of 330 million people. There's 535 members in Congress that make up the House and the Senate. And the moment we start pointing the finger at one person, believing that somehow this one individual is responsible for what's going on in our country, then we've kind of let our families down, our communities down. At the end of the day, we all have a responsibility, you and I and everyone else. We have a responsibility to conduct ourselves in a way that brings our country together. And focusing on an individual and trying to blame the president for every single thing that's wrong in our country, I think is misguided and I think is wrong. I think at the end of the day, we need to talk about what's best for American families, what's best for Granite State families, what's best for our communities. And what I've spent my time doing over 30 years in this state is giving back to my community, volunteering, coaching high school football, coaching rec league basketball, raising money for veterans, participating on all sorts of boards. Why? Because I think it's important to give back.
Well, midterms are often seen as a referendum on the president and his party. Everybody remembers President Obama's famous phrase in 2010, you know, we got a shellacking. Are you concerned, Mr. Edwards, that Republicans could get shellacked in 2018?
No, I'm really not. I'm really not, because I think the American voters have spoken really clearly in 2016. They want something different out of our politics, whether that's on the right or the left. They're sick of the same prognosticators about politics. They're sick of the same rhetoric. They're sick of the same metrics that are used to judge how effective a candidate will be. They want something different. They want genuine people. They want people who can relate to them. They want people who are like them. That's what they want in politics. You know, focusing on issues that do not create a better life for their families, their children, what's going on in their communities. That's not what voters are.
Mr. Edwards, and pardon me for interrupting. Two more quick questions for you, and I really appreciate you being with us.
No problem.
First one, if you could just pick like one key issue that you're going to present to voters in this general election, you know, Eddie Edwards will be the candidate who focused on X. What would that be?
Well, it's hard to pick one, but if I had to pick one issue, I want to talk about our veterans in this country. I really think that sends a clear message to me how this country respects our communities and our families. Again, because we have less than 1% of our population, less than 1% that guarantees our liberty and our freedom. Less than 1% of the nation of 330 million people. And we seem to can't get it right for that small group of people.
Well, and you served in the military yourself. So
yeah.
It's been noted more than once this morning and last night, Mr. Edwards, that you're the first African-American to win a congressional nomination from this district in New Hampshire. How are you reflecting on that today?
Well, to be completely honest with you, I am not reflecting on it at all. I know that it's a narrative for some folks, and there are some people are delighted to talk about it. Some people it has no bearing on them, but again, being a black in New Hampshire, a state that's 94% white, I think reveals just how open our state is to quality candidates. New Hampshire, and I've said this for a long time, New Hampshire doesn't care about race, gender, sexual orientation. New Hampshire cares about the quality of a person. And if you can represent yourself and you can bring quality to our state and represent the Granite Staters in a way that they're proud of, they don't care about those things. And I can't spend my time focusing on how that feels. I think I've never done that in my life, actually.
You've got a unity breakfast to prepare for and a general election to prepare for, too. So, Mr. Edwards, as you know, NHPR is preparing for debates, so we'll probably see you in a couple weeks. All right?
All right.
Thank you very much for calling in today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Bye-bye. That's Eddie Edwards. He, again, is the Republican primary winner in the 1st Congressional District. Join us with your calls, questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We'd love your thoughts, questions, comments, reflections on last night's results and what they mean going forward. Wayne Lesperance, what did you hear there in that conversation that we just had with Eddie Edwards? A solid victory, by the way, over Senator Andy Sanborn, who has more experience running for elections in an elective
office.
That was
a tough race and probably one of the closer ones that came out of last night. So he deserves a tremendous amount of credit. By the way, they all do. Everybody who stood for election, we ought to say thank you to, because that's just good civics. It's good for us all. I think what we heard ties back to the conversation we were having a moment ago about themes that we're hearing. So how do you unite the Democratic Party? What you're going to hear is a lot of focus on Donald Trump. That's the one thing that will bring them all together, because he, despite their differences, he is a common challenge for Democrats. And I think what you heard from Eddie Edwards is sort of a preview of the Republican strategy, and that is the focus on issues in New Hampshire. He doesn't want to talk about Donald Trump. They don't want to focus on him. To his point, his words were, that's one individual. Why are we putting all of this emphasis on him? He cares about veterans issues. He cares about New Hampshire issues. He used the word community several times. So I think you're going to see Republicans trying to turn back, focus within their states on the values of New Hampshire voters, Granite Staters, whereas Democrats are going to try to nationalize these races very quickly.
Well, and Lauren, the challenge for any candidate in a primary is to appeal to a base set of voters. But especially in this first district, it's really important that these primary winners appeal to a broader set of voters. So that's the challenge for Eddie Edwards and Chris Pappas.
Yeah, it's certainly the challenge. And as far as Edwards is concerned, I know there were a lot of moderate Republicans who didn't feel like there was a great option for them in this primary because Sanborn and Edwards played it so to the right and to the Trump base. And, you know, Edwards was backed by Rudy Giuliani. That's not going to go away. I think Trump will still hear about him from Edwards, even, you know, to his point that it's not just one person. I do think he will still continue to talk about his support for the president, because that's something that he did make a hallmark of his primary campaign. I'm interested to hear what he said about, you know, the historic nature of his potential election and how he would be the first black congressperson from New Hampshire. And I say that because he had brought up to WMUR this discrimination complaint that he had filed against the state of New Hampshire and this settlement that he received. And he had told WMUR that, you know, he remembered being told by someone in a high state government position that they're not used to black people having power. He said it was a really rough time for a couple of years there, and there was a settlement that came out of it. So I'm really interested to see how race comes up, how it's discussed, and if we hear more about that from him.
Josh, you want to jump in on this?
Well, I agree with what Lauren said, and certainly on Trump. I mean, he said he wanted to go down and stand with Donald Trump and drain the swamp. And so, you know, he during the primary, he clearly saw it as an advantage to, you know, make this race somewhat about a one person. And, you know, it's probably a smart and prudent pivot to focus on veterans. There are certainly a lot of veterans in the first CD. We've heard a lot of from congressional representatives and candidates in the past about the need to serve veterans. It was a priority of Carol Shea Porter. It was a priority of Jeb Bradley, who represented that district. And, you know, it will be interesting to see how this race goes. I mean, I think that the Democrats feel good that Pappas is somebody of, you know, mild manner with a real resume that will allow him to appeal to voters in the middle, independent voters. And I think it'll be a test for Edwards to see if he can do the same. I mean, this is not his first time running for office in that neck of the woods. He did run for a state Senate seat there, so he has some experience trying to court voters. You know, that would have been in a district that's largely Democratic that perhaps aren't inclined to vote Republican. So I think this will be a test for him.
Well, and we heard, again, Mr. Edwards talking about how he's going to reach out to the broader electorate in the first district. Let's hear a little bit now from the Democratic nominee, Chris Pappas. Here he is last night in his victory speech, presenting some specifics on the issues that he'll take into the general campaign against Eddie Edwards.
The people of this state deserve someone who will fight for them each and every day. As a member of the Executive Council, I was proud to fight hard to implement Medicaid expansion, which covers 53,000 people in our state, to protect funding at Planned Parenthood health centers across New Hampshire, and to invest in renewable energy projects and infrastructure to get our economy working. As your member of Congress, I'll continue those fights, and I'll work to make sure that we expand middle-class opportunity, lower healthcare costs and prescription drug costs, strengthen our public schools, and protect our natural environment.
Again, that's Chris Pappas in his victory speech last night in the first Congressional District Democratic primary. You can join us now with your questions and comments, 1-800 892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. To this point about now we pivot from the primary to the general election, Christopher in Manchester sent us an email. He says, Eddie Edwards talked a lot about conservatives and your panel has talked a lot about the Democratic progressives. The majority of New Hampshire voters, Christopher says, are undeclared, independent, and they are the ones who should be the focus from the candidates in November. Christopher, thank you so much for that email. And Wayne, what do you think?
I think he's absolutely right. And so this pivot word is kind of an interesting word. We sometimes think of that as being inauthentic and flip-flopping. We've used that before. But that's what has to happen. What has to happen is, as much as Eddie Edwards embraced Donald Trump and was the self-described most conservative in the race, he now has to find a way to talk to folks in the middle. And so I think the way he does that is what he alluded to. You talk about community issues, community values as a way of hooking in with them. You know, the conversations about Planned Parenthood, the conversations about more progressive issues that, you know, especially the Levy Sanders types of progressivism, that's not going to play well with middle-of-the-road voters for the most part. Planned Parenthood's a little bit different. But at the end of the day, there has to be a way of approaching and engaging those independents sort of right in the middle that aren't occupying one extreme or the other. We really are tough on candidates with our primary process. The primary process really draws out the folks from the furthest to the right, furthest to the left, choosing candidates. And then those candidates then have to figure out a way to talk to folks in the middle.
And they have to figure it out quite quickly.
And less than 2 months to go.
We have a very late primary here in New Hampshire. Right.
So it's really, New Hampshire's particularly tough on candidates that way.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, Josh? That's really interesting to me. I think it was noted yesterday that New Hampshire is the third latest primary. So it's a rush now for these candidates.
Well, it's a rush for somebody like Edwards. I mean, recall last week during the final debate on WMUR when he said the only topic on which he disagreed with President Trump was on bump stocks.
Right.
You know, that is, we're going to hear that a lot.
That's a 30-second ad right there.
And, I mean, and you know, he's going to have to deal with that. You know, Chris Pappas, by dint of his experience on the council as a county treasurer, as a state rep, as somebody who, you know, represents a council district that isn't, you know, solidly Democratic. And given his trajectory in politics, he's somebody with a comfort in discussing kind of, let's take care of your potholes, let's take care of the cost of your prescription drugs, let's deal with kind of lunch bucket issues. And I think we're going to hear a lot of that from him.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, I think we'll also hear this same vibe that Edwards has been bringing out during the primary, which is, I'm not a politician. And you heard him say, we're sick of the same prognosticators. I mean, I could see him trying to square Pappas in that box of, you know, you've been around a long time, you're a politician, I'm not. You know, I think that's something we heard all the Republicans try and spin throughout the primary. So that's something we might hear. And I think they're both going to try to play to their, I've been from New Hampshire this whole time. I've been around, I've been doing things. You heard Eddie Edwards say, I've worked for the last 30 years. You heard him say, I was a basketball coach. You know, voters, that's what they liked about Chris Pappas, that he's been around. He's from Manchester. He's got the Puritan, all those things. So it's certainly going to be interesting.
Yeah, no carpetbagger issues in the first congressional district, both of them with long, deep roots in New Hampshire. Lots of emails coming in from our listeners, and that's great. Keep them coming. exchange@nhpr.org. Mike of Lee says, please note that the winner of the New Hampshire District 1 election among Democratic candidates who were not big money or establishment was Mindy Mesmer. Mindy, without those huge advantages, showed that climate and environment are crucial issues that the base of the Democratic Party feels strongly about. Those issues cannot be ignored, and Chris Pappas will need to remember that when he goes to Congress. Mike, thank you for the email. We did hear at the tail end of that clip, Chris Pappas talking about the environment, but I really appreciate the email. Keep them coming in. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And all of you, we have not talked that much about the second congressional district Republican primary, so we'll tackle that after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, we examine New Hampshire's historic barns and the efforts to preserve them. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, we're looking at the primary results from last night. And now, what's next for New Hampshire voters in the rush toward the general election? Send us an email. Give us your thoughts, questions, comments. Exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We got an email from Todd. He says there are more than 520,000 people over age 50 in New Hampshire. They are concerned about prescription drug prices being out of control, the future of Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, and caregiving. Virtually no mention of these things, Todd says. The media and interest groups need to ensure that policy positions are clearly articulated and that voters need to realize their power at the polls. Now that we've narrowed the field, he says, it's time to ask the real and hard questions and demand real answers. And Todd, thank you for that. And Wayne, did you hear that much about some of these issues that Todd raises on the campaign trail this year?
Not in a meaningful way. I mean, there were certainly talking point moments and debates or on the stump. But I think Todd raises an excellent point. I think to some extent it's a shame on us moment when we don't hold candidates accountable for expressing their position on issues in a sophisticated way, beyond the bumper sticker responses. To some extent, our debates are structured, especially when you have 11 people on the stage, to get quick responses. But boy, wouldn't it be great to go back to the old Lincoln-Douglas days where we forced folks to actually give substantive answers. I know I'm dreaming, but I'm allowed to dream.
We'll try in our upcoming debates, Wayne. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
But to Todd's point, I think we as citizens ought to be demanding more of our candidates, and we ought to be demanding specifics on very sophisticated, complex policy issues. And he highlighted some that are very important to groups like AARP. But I would say up and down the list, there are policy issues we ought to be expecting more from our candidates on.
I would
also expect that those issues to come up in the general election. Oftentimes the debates during primaries, what candidates are talking about are smaller differences within a party. It is true that that these issues haven't been as front and center as they have been in past election cycles, but I would expect to hear a lot more about them now that we are courting voters in the middle and certainly courting the many older voters who exist in the general electorate.
And we'll definitely come out and vote. So thank you, Todd, for the email. Let's go to the phones. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Cheryl's in Concord. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I did turn in a little late because I was in class, but I did have a comment to make. I've been hearing a lot about how they want to court the independent voters. But there are a lot of us who might be registered as Democrat or registered as Republican who maybe don't fit the profile or the core constituents of Democrats and Republicans. Myself, for example, I'm a Democrat, but I also am very much in favor of gun ownership. I don't see that a lot of the candidates are courting people like myself. In fact, no one running came to my house this year in the primary season.
Very interesting. So you're sort of you can't be pigeonholed on any one issue, Cheryl, and you're wondering how they're going to reach out to you.
Right. Because, I mean, I don't want to change my affiliation. I think I am more independent, but I'm registered and I don't feel like changing it. But I don't fit the mold of a traditional.
Cheryl, thank you so much for the call. Wayne, what do you think?
I think Cheryl is representative of a lot of people, although I would say she may be the only person didn't have a candidate come knock on her door, because that seemed to be pretty popular.
I was hoping you'd ask where she lived.
Well, right.
Which ward do you mean? Yeah, in Concord.
But on the more substantive issues, she's right. I mean, there are a lot of folks in either party that have significant difference. There are Republicans who are pro-choice, for example, and a lot of talk about being pro-life in the last CD2, CD1 debates. Where do they fit in? So I think that these kinds of pieces, it's more than just nuance. It's important for candidates to find a way to speak to those folks, because those are the ones they really need to get to turn out.
Well, and I also think we shouldn't necessarily misunderstand the notion of an undeclared or an independent voter as being somebody who necessarily swings wildly between parties. I mean, they tend to vote predominantly with one party. There are some people who will pick candidates on both sides of the line, but by and large, they are people who are predisposed to support one party or the other.
Lauren?
Yeah, and I think where we're going to really see this really interesting is on the gun question, where, you know, in the CD1 race, for example, either one of these guys is going to have to represent a constituency that includes people who want more gun control and people who are really passionate about the Second Amendment and who really, you know, own guns at home or are very passionate about that. and how they strike a balance between trying to prevent, you know, mass shootings, but also respecting the Second Amendment is going to be hard to strike, especially when so many Democrats, especially, are all about gun control right now.
And yeah,
so
you finding a lot of coverage that, of this issue.
Yeah, right? And so finding that middle ground is going to be really, really difficult.
Cheryl, I appreciate the call. Josh?
Well, that was one thing that was interesting in the governor's race in the primary was Steve Marchand said, you know, ad infinitum, I have a 7-point plan on gun safety, and like, you may not agree with all of it, and it involves this, that, and the other. And, you know, Molly Kelly tended to couch her support for gun control measures as common sense reforms to gun ownership. And, you know, that is probably smart in terms of reaching a broader swath of the electorate once you get through the primary. And, you know, that's going to be there's going to be a lot of discussion of that in the governor's race. The first bill of consequence that Chris Sununu signed was, of course, the rescinding of the concealed carry permit requirement. And, you know, Democrats think that that's a place where they can pick up support from voters in the middle.
Yeah, Molly Kelly's been very clear that that's one of the first things she would try to do was bring back that permitting requirement. So, Cheryl, glad you raised the gun issue because it is going to be big this year. Go ahead, Wayne.
Just really quickly, let's remember, too, that today is the beginning of sort of a reset in this process.
Right.
There was really no room to tack to the middle in a primary process because, again, you're pivoting towards the more extreme elements of both parties. But now we're going to see how they are, how nimble they are, how excellent they are at tap dancing, because we're going to see candidates try to move back where they can to the middle. And to the extent that some candidates created that space for themselves during the primary, they're going to have a greater ease of doing so.
Well, we've got to talk about the second congressional district Republican primary, folks. And this was the race that took the longest to decide. And while there were six candidates, really three rose to the top, bounced around all night in terms of who was leading. And in the end, it seems like it was State Representative Steve Negron over Dr. and VA whistleblower Stuart Levinson and former State Representative Lynn Blankenbecker. Wayne, to you first, but Josh, I want to hear from you, too. You live in the 2nd District. You host candidates often at the Center for Civic Engagement at New England College. What do you think put Steve Negron over the top?
That's a good question. I think that there's quite a bit of energy in all three of these campaigns. Frankly, I thought towards the end there, Lynn Blankenbecker was really surging, and I think that you saw by the actions of the other campaigns that they were responding to that. But at the end of the day, I think Negron had an excellent team. I think Negron was everywhere. And I think that his message probably resonated with the widest swath of Republican voters. It's one I'm going to want to dig around in. Remember, the margin here is very small.
Close.
It's
yeah.
Very small. So in a sense, I guess if you're a Republican voter in the 2nd CD, you had an embarrassment of riches in terms of choice. And that's not a bad thing. So we'll pick away at this one and try to get a sense better as we go forward.
How hard or easy is it, Josh, for Republicans in the 2nd District?
Well, it's gotten harder over time. I mean, the district tends to tilt more Democratic than it used to. You know, you look at where the votes are in the district, you know, Nashua, if you can do well there, makes it easy for you. I haven't actually parsed who did what there, but, you know, Steve Negron is from the southern part of the state. I think he was probably helped out by that. As far as unseating Annie Custer, you know, on paper, that's a tall order. I mean, recall last time, though, people didn't give Jim Lawrence much of a shot, and he came closer than a lot of people expected. This is probably going to be a different dynamic this election cycle. But, you know, Custer is known as a prolific fundraiser. She, you know, comes from a well-known political family that, you know, had GOP roots, sort of GOP roots of a sort that you know, kind of a kind of Republicanism that doesn't really exist much anymore. But she's well-known in her district. She's comfortable raising money. She has a lot of money. And, you know, she's going to be launching her campaign today. We'll see what she's saying. But, you know, certainly on paper, this is a tough district for Republicans.
Sure. For the past 25 years, this district has sent either moderate Republicans like Charlie Bass or Democrats to Congress. So maybe a little tougher for someone like Negron, who says, I'm a solid conservative.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how close this really was. I mean, when you look at the numbers, and it's almost all in. Negron has, you know, 10,893 votes, and then Levinson has 10,426. I mean, that's not that many.
Yeah.
And to Josh's point, looking at the numbers, in Nashua is where Negron really, really just crushed it. I mean, he came away with 49% of the vote, with, you know, over 2,000 votes. Coming in next was Stuart Levinson with 800. I mean, so that goes to show those are the areas where he'll certainly be paying a lot more attention.
Okay. Again, you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. We don't have time to go into this too much now, but I did want to ask all of you, were there other sort of quote-unquote down-ballot races that you were watching? Josh, how about you?
Well, I was looking at the executive council race, the race for Chris Pappas' seat. You had two primaries. You had Gray Chynoweth, a former Dyne executive, versus Garth Corvo, who, you know, served in local office in Manchester, two young guys. Chynoweth ended up winning. And then on the Republican side, you had Ted Gatzis, former Manchester mayor, former state senate president, running against Jane Cormier, who was running as a conservative. And, you know, it's going to be Gatzis and Chynoweth. And that's going to be, I think, kind of an interesting race. I mean, executive council races, you know, the politics around them are a little murky. There are not really so many issues you can really run against or, you know, really flex all that much ideology. I mean, there are some issues around, you know, reproductive rights potentially, but that's not really something Ted Gatzis has spent much time with in his career. But it's in this race, it's going to be kind of an old Manchester, new Manchester dynamic, which I think is going to be interesting to watch. Another primary that I was keeping an eye on was the Democratic primary in the state Senate seat currently held by Andy Sanborn that he, you know, vacated
right.
in order to run for Congress.
And that's the Bedford area.
Bedford over to sort of Peterborough, okay. Monadnock area. And that was an interesting race in that you had Mark Fernald, who represented that district years ago, ran for governor and lost badly to Craig Benson in 2002, also had run against Gene Sheen in 2000 and lost in the primary. But he, of course, remember, ran on income tax. He's still running on property tax relief, and he was one candidate, Gene Deitch, who ran a very vigorous campaign in the area, ended up winning that primary. The third candidate was Bruce Fox, proprietor of the Friendly Farm. And so it was an interesting dynamic there. Deitch won that. It'll be interesting to see. That's been a tough seat for Democrats to get their hands on for some time. And in the primary, they're going to be facing the more conservative candidate. Terry Wolfe and Dan Hines were running there. Hines won that more easily than I would have expected, frankly. He's quite conservative, sort of liberty-minded conservative. So it's going to be Hines versus Deitch. That's going to be an interesting contrast.
That is interesting. And that state Senate seat sounds interesting to me, Josh, because you've got, you know, Bedford, which is sort of a bucket of Republican votes. But then you've got Peterborough and other parts of the Monadnock region, which skew more liberal. So that could be sort of a toss-up state Senate seat.
That's interesting. And then, you know, obviously Democratic leader Jeff Woodburn, who's, you know, been charged in domestic violence related stuff. He faced a write-in challenge from Kathleen Kelly, whose family owns a local lumber business up in the north. She's from Gorham, actually from Randolph. But Woodburn prevailed, and so, you know, his situation is going to be hanging over Democrats. Recall that pretty much all the Democrats in the state Senate, with the exception of Lou D'Alessandro, said that he should resign.
Yeah, so that's interesting. And that seat, which would have been safe for Democrats had Mr. Woodburn not gotten into this trouble, now seems really
well, it may still be safe for Democrats given Woodburn's name ID, but it's going to complicate the messaging for the
yeah.
party in a minute.
State Senate, really interesting. I like to kind of geek out on State right. Senate Executive Council. Go ahead, Wayne.
Well, thanks for indulging my poli-sci geekdom here. But the libertarians, remember, you'll recall the Free State Project, bringing in the idea of creating a libertarian panacea here in New Hampshire. So I've been watching election. And so in the gubernatorial primary for the Libertarian candidate, you had Aaron Day and Jaletta Jarvis, under 1,000 votes total. And so far, Jaletta Jarvis is leading. That hasn't been called yet. And there was also I believe it was a CD2 Libertarian race as well. Again, I think the big takeaway there is this, the number of votes cast. In that case, just around 500 votes. And Justin O'Donnell leading, again, not called. So, you know, libertarians will say we never talk about them. I think it's important to. But, you know, I think the flip side of that is the total number of folks who are voting in those libertarian primaries, I think, is something.
Well, it's interesting to recognize that they achieved actual official ballot status
right.
for this election, which hadn't been the case for some years.
Yeah, that is interesting. We were talking about that last night on the air, Wayne, the impact of libertarians on some of these races. Might be more of an impact in the general election, though, right, Wayne? I mean, last night was really about party primaries.
Right. Well, they certainly had an impact running in the Republican elections last time. I mean, I think Kellyette would say they
yes.
had an effect on her race against Maggie Hassan. They siphoned a lot of potential votes away from her.
That's right, although they would object to us saying talking about siphoning, but that's in fact what really happened. So you're right, the general election, that's where it becomes key, but it creates another wrinkle for Republican candidates primarily, and how do you address, how do you speak to that particular segment of the voting population?
Phew, I'm glad I'm not running for office. sounds difficult. All of you, just looking ahead, Lauren, you first, what are you going to be watching, thinking about, covering now that this primary season is over?
Well, I'll be looking for those people in the middle. I'll be trying to find voters
like
who
Cheryl.
Are torn like Cheryl between, you know, what party do I affiliate with? What are my issues? And what if I split on some issues? And I'll be watching closely to see how, especially in the CD1 race, how Edwards and Pappas try to court that middle.
So, and you will be covering primarily the CD1 race for us here at NHPR.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Josh, how about you?
Well, I'm probably going to be focusing mostly on the governor's race, and I'm going to be watching to see whether there's going to be a Democratic groundswell, which would, you know, upend the norm and spell an exit for Chris Sununu, and watch how he rides what, you know, has been a pretty popular tenure into the general election. So how he and Molly Kelly compare and contrast themselves, I think, is going to be very interesting to watch.
Wayne?
Two quick things. First, the nationalization of the process. Will President Trump make a visit to the state? Will he be involved in any real way in this election? And the second, this is a shameless plug, the coverage by reporters from New Hampshire Public Radio was really incredible. And I think we get a lot of our information. I know I followed on the website. I promise I'm not being paid for this. But the results that were coming in was coming in through the team, folks in this room, folks like Dan Tuohy. So I think, you know, I don't know that you all hear this enough, but thank you, because that's an important service for all of us who are paying attention to election results.
Well, it means a lot, Wayne.
From one shameless plug to the other, let me shamelessly plug. You were telling me before we went on the air, Wayne, that now that the primary is over and the general election really has begun, you're starting to get nibbles from presidential candidates to come to New England College.
Town hall meetings are starting soon. We'll have presidential candidates on campus. We'll be doing congressionals as well. It's going to be busy times.
It already got started. You had Kasich, what, it was like 3 months ago.
We did. We had Kasich. We've had Julian Castro. We've got plenty more coming.
Okay.
So stay tuned.
All of you. This has been great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome, Laura.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Remember, our conversation always continues online, on Facebook. We're also on Instagram at NHPR Exchange. So check it out for some fun behind-the-scenes photos. I'm Laura Knoy. Thanks for listening. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.